Okay, the boy said today's daf is daf kuf hey. We're holding the last line of kif dalid umad beis. In the middle of the line, the Gemara says, Omar Rava, chode iska utre shtori pseida de malve, tre iski v'chad shtori pseida de loive. What is this referring to? So we spoke about iska already yesterday. It reminded us of those wonderful days of Perek Ezeu Neshech, when we were talking about the inyan of iska. Iska means that two people are getting together in a joint venture. One of them is the investor, he puts in the capital. The other one is the manager, he puts in what we call the sweat equity. He's the one that's going to actually work with the investment, and hopefully it's going to bring in nice payers. So we already spoke about yesterday that the chum specially made, that it shouldn't be an inyan of ribis, that it's chutzi pekudain, and it's chutzi milva. But over and above that, the chum was still concerned that it looks like a ribis. So what they did was they said that you could not have that the profits are divided up evenly and that the losses are divided up evenly, because what's going to happen is that the manager, the person who's putting in the sweat equity, is going to be giving a freebie to the investor. And the reason why he's giving him a freebie is because of it's a hidden interest factor. So what the Chum said is, what you have to do is that the profits and the losses should not be exactly the same, but rather the investor that puts up the money, he has to have either a greater, he always has to have a larger percentage of the losses and a smaller percentage of the gains. So for instance, if they are splitting up the losses half-half, then he has to make sure that in terms of the gains, he only takes a third and he leaves two-thirds with the manager. Alternatively, you could have that he would have two-thirds of the losses, and then it would split up the gains 50-50. Regardless, bottom line is, Zokta Yomara, that the Malva has to take upon himself a greater percentage of the loss than the percentage of the gain. Good. Based on that, what Agamor is telling us is, says Rava, if you have one ASIC, one business venture, make sure that it's all set forth in one document, not in two documents, because it's going to be set forth in two documents, it's going to be a hefsid for the malva. Malva means the capital investor, the one that's putting in the equity. Moishi. Okay, getting back to argument. So, Rashi gives a very, very simple example, and we just have to halt cheshbon, because it's very, very simple arithmetic. Barry, you can help me out over here. What's a simple arithmetic? We're talking about the entire equity investment was $100. Let's say $100. Make it very, very simple, $100. Of that, says Rashi, there were two chavilois of bigodim. He's selling two groups of clothing, fabric, what have you. Each one of them is 50 and 50. Good. On one of these chavilois, he lost, lamazong, $5. One of them was a $5 loss. On the other package, the other chavila, he gained, he won, $15. Right? He lost 5 on one, he gained 15 on the other. Loss of 5, gain of 15. Okay, so let's go and put it all together as a package deal. Okay, so now, since he lost 5 and he gained 15, 15 minus 5 is 10, right? So that's pretty straightforward, 10. And since the capital investor took upon himself half of the losses but a third of the gains, since the net gain is altogether 10, a third of the net gain would be 3 and a third. Everybody agrees to that? 3 and a third? Yeah, atamaskim, sebeseba, sure. 3 and a third is the gain. Fine. Let's talk about, however, if we do this separately. What means to do it separately? Don't combine the two, but let's go and do the arithmetic one at a time. Again, a loss of 5, a gain of 15. A loss of 5, since he incurs 50% of the loss, what's 50% of the loss of 5? 2.5. How much does he gain on the gain side? Only 1/3. What's 1/3 of 15? 5. So now he's lost 2.5, he's gained 5. How much is 5 minus 2.5? 2.5 left. So therefore he gains by combining the two initially and then doing the arithmetic, as opposed to doing the arithmetic first and then coming out with the gain. Because in our case, right, for all those that don't remember, we start again. He lost 5, gained 15, 15 minus 5 is 10, we took a third of 10, was 3 and a third. However, if we did the arithmetic first, and we took first half of the 5 is minus 2.5, third of the gain, a third of 15 is 5. 5 minus 2.5 is 2.5. So therefore, much better from the malvis perspective, malvis meaning the person putting in the capital equity, we're much better off if we go and combine the two as one chavila, as if it's one asik, because by combining them, then you maximize his profits, he gets 3 1/3. However, if you go and split it up, says Rav, chod isk, it's one asik. Utrei shtori, if you put it into two separate documents, as if they're two separate investments, say to the malva, then he's going to lose out, because he's only going to get 2.5, instead of getting 3 1/3. And similarly, says the Gemara at the top, Gemara is just repeating the same thing in reverse. Trei iski, if there were really two totally separate investments, the chad shtar, they just merged it together in one shtar, but it was really two transactions. One was an investment in widgets, and the other was an investment in the clothing or whatever. Two totally separate things. But they merged in one shtar, then say to the loiva, then the person putting in the sweat equity will lose out, because for him it would have been better to go and split it up in two, like the Gemara said before. Why is Gemara telling us this? Says Rashi that Rav is telling us now good legal advice, that if you're talking about one ASIC, one venture, make sure that you document it in one document, and if you're talking about two ISKI, put it into two documents so that you don't unfairly and inequitably deny one of the two of their true share of the profits and losses. And Rav now continues on in the same vein. Hayman the kibbal iska min chavre, person who was mekabel and esik. In other words, we're talking about the manager, the sweat equity person who's actually running with the ball and with the investment. Upasid. Initially, unfortunately, there was a downturn in the market, downturn in his mazel, and he did not do well. These things happen. What did he do? Torach umalia. He, however, was embarrassed to go back to the financier, to the investor, and say, by the way, I lost. So what did he do? Torach, he was matriach, umalia, and he filled in that loss by working extra hard on the remaining schoira to go and now change it from underneath the, to make instead of red, now back into the black. He didn't even go and tell him initially about the losses. Every day in davening, when he asked him, was Herzog, oh, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. And of course, he's Mekayim the Mitzvah, or the Gemara in the Sechtes Brachas, Kishem Shem Mavarach Ala Toive, Kach Mavarach Ala Ra. So every day, Baruch Hashem, everything is fine. But of course, it wasn't so fine, he was losing. But Baruch Hashem, the fortunes turned, and the market went up again. And in fact, he was able to go and recoup all of his losses until he was back in the black. Now, at this point, he's no longer embarrassed, and he goes now to the financier and says, financier, I got good news and bad news. The good news is we ended the year, Baruch Hashem, in the plus column, and we did nicely, and everything is fine. The bad news is at the beginning of the year, we suffered terrible losses, but Baruch Hashem, Baruch gave us mazel and bracha, atzlacha, and we were able to overcome. Why is he telling him about the bad news? Why didn't he just tell him about the good news? Because he says, I'd like you to go and share in the first 6 months' losses with me, and then after that we'll share in the gains of the second half of the year. So you're saying to yourself, why would he go and say that? For the exact same reasons that we were speaking about a moment ago. Because if you split it up into two seasons, into two chavilois, then from the purposes of the malve, that is the financier, it's much better that you keep them all together as one, so you maximize your profits. However, if you're going to split it up into two, then he's going to have to incur the heavy half loss, that is the 50% loss on the first half of the year, and he's only going to get a third of the gain of the second half of the year. That's why it's much better if you can go and push the two together, then he's sharing the loss together with the other fellow, with the manager that's actually running with the ball. So all Rav is really saying is just really repeating the same shtickle Torah, but in a different form. And he's saying is that if the person that's running with the ball unfortunately didn't do a good job, he was not matzliach the first 6 months, and then afterwards he was matzliach the next 6 months, he shouldn't try to cause the malveh to have to share both in the loss and in the gain, but rather he should merge it all first, and then the malveh will share with in the bottom line, and that will be to his benefit that he will do well. Says the Gemara, what's the reason why the manager was not willing to go and share the news about the losses at the beginning of the year? Says the Gemara, Mishum the Omale, the financier, the investor, says to the manager, Lahachi tarchis, the reason why you put in all of this tircha, lemal yusei, to go and recoup all those losses and to fill up the gap, and you didn't even tell me about it. He shouldn't get a reputation as a person that unfortunately loses out in the ventures. So therefore, since it was to your benefit to keep it quiet, continue to keep it quiet, don't say anything, and rather we will go and share in the ultimate gains at the end of the year after we've merged the loss and the gain together. Now here we're talking about one financier and two managers, meaning one financier said to two people, I understand each one of you happens to be great as a manager. I want the two of you to work together to go and make money. And in fact, Baruch Hashem, it was a very, very good proposition, a good proposal, because the two together, Baruch Hashem, they were marviach. Now, Rashi points out that he gave them a time. In other words, he gave them, let's say, 6 months. From now, for the next 6 months, from January to July, and he said, for the next 6 months, I give you $100, work with this $100 and try to make a lot of money. So the two worked together hand in hand, and already March time, they'd already marched on, they already did a nice job, and they already had Baruch Hashem, Revoch. And one of the two managers says to the other guy, Talithli, now Baruch Hashem, we've already made money, let's go and already split the profits at this time. Says the Gemara, if the other manager says, no, I want to wait until July, let's not split anything now, let's hold the splitting in abeyance, he is the one in the right and the other one is wrong. In other words, he has the upper hand. What's the reason why? Although our Gemara says V'i, but the way Rashi and the Bacha Goyis, it's E, and now the Gemara is just speaking out loud. Why can one manager force the other manager to keep the money in the business and not take out any of the profits? Because if the manager that wants to take out some of the money says, not take out the money from the Karen. The Karen we're going to leave. But from the Ravach, I want to split the Ravach already. After all, I could use the cash. He tells him, Ravach lekarne mishtabit. We need the Ravach and we have to keep it in the business. The reason why we have to keep the Ravach in the business, as Rashi is, because although we were Baruch Hashem Matzliach from January to March, but from April to July we might not be Marviach. So therefore we're much better off leaving the extra cash in to go and cover any potential for a loss. So you can't just go and take out the money, figure, oh, let's go and split. No, we need it in the business, as in fact, just like today, people have reserves for all different types of capital expenses and maintenance and this and repairs and what have you. We have to leave the money in the business just in case there will be expenses and losses in the future. He says, you know what? Since you are so adamant about it, let's go and split it down the middle. You'll keep half of the Karen and half of the Revach for further investment, and I want to take half of the Revach and half of the Karen, and I'll invest it the way I want to, and therefore mine won't touch yours, and you don't have to worry about the losses. The reason why the investor, the financier, gave us the two together, because he felt that we two together are going to be Marviach, and therefore, if you're going to split it up, we're not going to have that benefit of working together. And the whole ASIC has that special mazel because it's one ASIC together as one. You split it down the middle, it's not going to have that same effect. The Omalei, Niflik Ravcha, the Niflik Karna, the Motil Chopseida Dorine Badach. What happens if the second manager says to him, I know what your concern is. Your concern is that if we're going to split up the ASIC, we're going to split up the Revachim, that maybe for the next few months, you're not going to be Matzliach, and you're going to have a loss, and there won't be that extra buffer of the previous profits to go and cover the losses or to plug the holes. You know what? I'll make up with you the following. Split it out in the middle. You'll have your Keren V'Revach, I'll have my Keren V'Revach, just in case you're not Matzliach from now, from March until July. I will make good on those losses and I will share some of the profits with you. So therefore, in the meantime, let's split and you hold on to half of it and work with that. And if there's a loss, don't worry, I'm here to help you. mazel de beitrei, or if the mazel, the two working together, there's a special mazel there. That's the reason why the financier hired the two of us to have that mazel. Therefore, let's not split. We have to go and stick together. And that's what the Gemara says. Dinu demakif, he can go and he has the upper hand on all of this. The reason why he has the upper hand is because since the financier gave them the 6 month time period, they should go and fill up that entire 6 months, continuing investing as one. So the Mishnah Vayta. You have a person who is hired to go and take care of the field, and he doesn't want to do the nichush. Nichush means to go and weed out the bad weeds from the property. The omaloi, and now this fellow says to the landowner, ma'ichpas l'cho, or like they say in Eretz Yisrael, ma'ichpat l'cha, what difference does it make to you? I'm going to go and give you your chakiras. What does that mean? So Rashi points out, we see already from this part of the Mishnah, like the Gemara said already yesterday, all the future Mishnayis in our parak either will be arisis or chakranis. So he's saying to him, I am a choker. Choker means I give you a fixed amount of tvur. And therefore, Mr., our deal was I'm going to go and give you 1,000 bushels of wheat for the year. I'm giving you 1,000 bushels. What difference does it make to you if they're weeds or not weeds? I will suffer that loss, not you. Because I'm guaranteeing you and I'm going to give you the 1,000 bushels of wheat regardless of what the weeds do to this field. Even if they destroy the entire field, it makes no difference. I'm giving you your 1,000. Says the Mishnah, you don't listen to him, and they shiocha loy malay. Because the landowner says to him, you're only thinking short term for this season. Lamachar ati yoitzim in a minute. Tomorrow you're going to find a better deal, and you're going to move somewhere else and do work for somebody else. Or malas lefonai asovim, and these bad weeds are going to go and ruin the entire property. Therefore, you have to do the nichush, you have to do the weeding.
Can you translate those last two words, malas
lefonai asovim? What does the word mala mean?
Raising,
they will uprise. Asovim means grass, but here it means bad grass, meaning the weeds. So if you're not going to do the nichush, you're not going to go and uproot these terrible weeds. What's going to happen is you're going to move on to the next field, and then you're going to leave with me all of these weeds, which are going to continue to grow and rise up in rebellion against the good grain growing from my field. Is it good? Okay, so now the Gemara is going to go in a little bit more in detail in the dialogue between the two. And of course, again, we're talking about... Yeah, is it good? Yeah, it's a friend. Okay. Zok the Gemara. What happens if the person who's working the field says, instead of doing the nichush, whilst everything is growing, I will do the nichush at the end. Nichush means to weed. Here the Gemara says, instead of doing the weeding whilst all of the grain is growing, let's wait until the harvest. After the harvest is over, Karimnava, I'm going to plow the field from top to bottom, back and forth, to destroy all of the weeds. Uviarta Rami Kebecha, I'm going to make a Lashem Yichud, and therefore I'm going to do a great job. Amalei, the landowner can go and say, Chidimali Sabina. That is going to help for the future, but that doesn't help for now. In other words, the product, the produce that you're going to give me, the 1,000 bushels, they're going to be deficient and inferior because of the weeds that were growing in the field. The Omalein, if he tells him, Zvinu Lecha, Chitim Mishuka, you don't have to worry about it. You're right, the Chitim from this field are inferior. But I'm going to go to the Shuk and I'm going to buy triple A wheat from somebody else, and it's going to be the best. So therefore, since I guaranteed you 1,000 bushels, don't worry, you're going to get 1,000 bushels of superior wheat. I want to have from my land. I know the next door neighbor has better wheat. I don't want his better wheat. I want my wheat. And therefore, don't tell me that you're going to destroy the wheat at the end, at the time of the harvest. You got to destroy them now. The Amalei, what happens if the worker in the field says, Man chishna loch shir monaseich? He says to him, I'm going to go and be menachish your portion. Meaning, let's assume that they had a division of the Mesa Shushvarabia. So he says, you're 50%, or really it's not a rhesus of the Hakiris. But he's saying, on the 1,000 bushels of wheat that will grow, let's put a portion of the field that grows 1,000, the northeastern corner, that will grow 1,000 bushels of wheat. That 1,000 bushels, that corner, I'm going to do a weeding like you've never seen before, but not on the rest of the field. I just do nichash on yours. So therefore you'll have chitam al yisa, the best in the shensta, and you'll have no tainus to me. You're going to develop a very bad reputation for my land. Well, what's the bad reputation? Because people are going to see that you brought in a special team of experts to go and weed out the weeds in my corner. They don't realize that you only kept the weeding in one corner. People assume they see this big, big weed truck that says on it, we uproot all the weeds in the world, and they assume that they weeded the entire property. And guess what? We've seen the rest of the property. There's a weed over here, no weed over there, weed everywhere. And people are saying, oh boy, this property be so bad after this big truck with these team of weeders came in and they uprooted all the weeds and look at all these weeds that are growing. And they don't realize that he only weeded out one quarter or one tenth of the field in the northeastern corner. They don't know about the rest of the property. So therefore you're developing a bad name for my property. If I want to go and sell it next year, people say, yeah, it's a lousy property. Do you see all those weeds that were growing even after they took out all the weeds? Frank Timura, all of this dialogue is fascinating. But tonight we go back to the Mishnah. There was a very, very short dialogue that the owner of the property says, I don't want you to go and do karivna at the end. I want you to do nichush now. What's the reason why? Because they're going to be all these weeds. Not because of the shemra, and not because my mana, your mana. We didn't have all of this long dialogue. Says Yimari, you're right. It's all very, very simple. What's going on? The landowner says to the worker, I want you to go and weed this property throughout the growing season. And he says, no, I'm going to go and do the uprooting of the weeds after the harvest. I'm going to go and bring all these big tractors and oxen, and we're going to plow the field and destroy all the weeds. That sounds right. However, says the Gemara, it's wrong. Why is it wrong? Because bizra the nafal. The word bizra means zera, means seeds. Seeds that fall from the bad weeds, they will settle into the ground, and even the plowing after that won't destroy those seeds. That'll destroy any weeds which are sticking out and protruding. Yeah, that they will destroy and uproot, fine. But whatever seeds fall from the bad wheat, they have fallen already, and they're going to be in the ground. The next year, it's going to be male asab. That's why he wants, during the growing season, to pull out all those weeds, so that those weeds are not going to go and reproduce with new zera, with new seeds. And therefore, by the time next year comes along, there won't be any new weeds growing from the old seeds from last year's weeds. Zokti Mishtabaita. A person took upon himself a field. Unfortunately, the field didn't produce. Why didn't it produce? Igmar doesn't go into it. Maybe there was a drought. Maybe there was a mazel oilam. Whatever, climate change, whatever it was, lamasa, the field was not producing. And now the worker says, there's no purpose in my working over here, because whatever efforts I'm going to put in, the results are going to be very, very modest and very minimal. Forget about it, I'm not interested in working in the field. Says the Mishnah, Yesh Bok de Lahamid Kri Chayv Letapuba. If the amount that you'll be able to collect from this entire field will at least be able to go and bring you a heap of the grain, we're going to see what the definition of the heap is when we get to the Gemara. But if the total amount that you'll be able to go and produce from this property will be a heap, then Chayv Letapuba, the worker cannot say, I'm taking vacation for the next 6 months. He has to go and work in the property, even if he doesn't want to. I'm sorry? So, Freyti Yitzhak, the Goldfarb, we're talking about Arises, or we're talking about Hakiris. Explains Rashi.
Hakira, who cares?
You're asking a Hakira. What we're talking about Hakiris, or we're talking about Arises,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Hakira.
Okay, so Dr. Goldfarb is quoting the Rashi. If you go to Rashi, about 8 lines into the wide lines, Chayv Letapul Babal Korcha, he has to work whether he likes it or not. V'olesa Elebekablanusa. Obviously, we're talking about Arises. The Iba Chakrinus, if you're talking about Chakiris, why does the Balasada care if he's going to take vacation for the next 6 months or not? So it's he has to go and give him the same 1,000 bushels of wheat, whether it produces one bushel or produces a million bushels. He has that rental payment that he has to make. So the whole clear in the Mishnah, whether he can go and force him to work in the field or not, all has to do with if it's an arisus, a sharecropping situation. And therefore he tells them that even though this property is going to produce very, very little, as long as it produces one kri, Chayav l'tapel v'yu, got to work in the field. If it cannot even produce a kri, then he gets vacation. Amar Rav Yehuda, my kids for b'kri. How can you talk about a kri? Because after all, what happens if this property happens to be a mile wide and a mile long? So you're going to say that that has the same din as a piece of property which is 4 by 4 feet. Obviously, the larger property will be able to be mamon a kri, and the small little property won't. It's hard to go and give a fixed amount of a kri. Ben gadol u ben katan. Elam yesh ba kedei nefil. But Rav, the shear is whether or not you can harvest enough that the seeds from the new tvua that you're harvesting will be enough to go and seed the property for next year. We're going to see in Mir Tashem what those proportions are on the Amid Beis. How much seed do you need to go and seed a property to produce a full amount? So even though the amount that is being produced is relatively small, if there's enough at least to reproduce next year based on the seeds growing from these new bushels which have been produced, if those seeds are enough to go and sow and plant for next year, that's already enough that you have to be metapel in this field.
That seems like a good argument.
It sounds like a wonderful argument. I always liked Rabbi Huda. I was always one of the outstanding tanoim.
I don't see the logic of the other thing. If guys got huge field,
mm-hmm.
How could you say that just...
So you're saying it's more mistaka?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a proportion to anticipating next year.
Exactly. Zokti Mar, Tan Rabban. Our case, unfortunately, the soda is not producing, it's not working. So the Bryce is adding is that this was the nusach of the agreement between the landowner and between the artist. What did he write? The artist wrote, Ano, I will stand up, the onir, and I will plow, the ezra, and I will seed, I will plant, the echtzoid, and I will cut, I will harvest, the amir, and I'm going to go and put into bundles, the odish, and I'm going to thresh, the idri, and I'm going to winnow, the oikim karya, and then I'm going to put together a nice heap, kodamach, in front of you, the teise ant, the tito palga, and then you, the landowner, will come and take 50% of that heap, vanobamoli, and my, with my sweat, ubenafkis yodi, and with the hard work that I put through my hands, palga, I will to take a half. So what do we see? The document required him to make a heap, and that's why the Tanakhama in Amisha says, that's why he's got to make a heap. And if there's not enough to produce a heap, then he's off the hook. Thank you. Can you tell me what that means? Harachas is what we call today a pitchfork. That is the very, very large, it looks similar to a pitchfork, that at the end of it you pick up the tvua and you throw it up in the air, and that's how it becomes winnowed, because the draft, the ruach of the air, is going to go and split between the chaff and between the grain. So that's Tamid Bayrachas. Rachas is that large pitchfork that you put in the heap so that it should be standing. If it's big enough, wide enough, tall enough that the Rachas can stand in it, it's a simon that that's a heap. Iboilo. So now the Gemara asks, Rachas, yoitzmi haigis lahaigis amai. How much of the Rachas has to be covered? Does it have to be covered from top to bottom, from wide, from right to left? If it's protruding here or there a little bit, what's the din? Toshima Amr Bavo, the Didim of Ashley Mine Darbesh Khanina, Kosha in Koinis Shaloi Roy Pneyacham. You don't look at the handle, you look at the koines. Koines means that part on the bottom, just like you have a regular shovel, you have the long handle, and then you have the shovel at the bottom. Here too, when you're talking about a pitchfork, you have the long handle, and you have the bottom of it with which you pick up the tvua and throw it up in the sky. So the koines means that the bottom part, the real essence of the pitchfork. As long as that is not roi pnei cham, in other words, if it's covered from side to side, from end to end, you don't see it, that means that that's a good heap, and that's enough for you to have to go and continue working in the field. What's the shiur? It my lady omer sholeh soin, to Rabbiani amri sasayin. This is a machloikis among the mafarshim, whether Levi and Rabbiani are arguing in Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina's halacha of Kadesh Tamid Boy Harachas, how much is that? 3 or 2 sa'a? Or whether they're independently saying, forget about Rachas, the shear is 3 sa'a or 2 sa'a. But whatever it is, That's the shear of the kri. Amr Rish Lakish, Sasayim She'amr Chutz Min HaHaitzah. Rish Lakish says that when we talk about the Sasayim, we mean the final net bottom line after taking off capital expenses. Because obviously to go and develop even the Sasayim, you have to go and put in all types of Haitzahs. The labor and the fertilizer and the irrigation and the weeding and all the things that you have to do to finally get your bottom line Sasayim. So Rish Lakish says, when do we say that you have to continue working in the field if after all the overhead and all of the expenses and all of the labor, you're left with the sasayim? Oh, that's enough to continue working in the field. So until now we spoke about grain, and the ikar is that we just mentioned a moment ago, Rabbi Yanai. What was Rabbi Yanai? Rabbi Yanai, Amri sasayim. Because we mentioned Rabbi Yanai, the Gemara is going to bring two or three or four examples of Mishnayos elsewhere throughout Shas, which are totally unrelated to us, but we're bringing them because Dvei Rabbi Yanai had something to say about the Shiurim in those other cases. So just like here, Dvei Rabbi Yanai is a sign. Tanan Hasim, we learned. V is their Mishnah, a Mishnah in Mesechtus Uktsin, Pritzei Zeisim v'Anovim. Pritzei Zeisim, as we'll see in the Gemara in another moment, is a nice way of saying Zeisim v'anovim that are never going to ripen, and therefore they are always going to be inferior and deficient. The word Pritzim, as we'll see in the Gemara, is a negative connotation. So you have these negative Zeisim v'anovim. The question is, are they mekabel tuma or not? Food typically is mekabel tuma, but that's only food which is considered to be edible, then it has a din of tuma. What happens to food which is totally inedible, then it doesn't have a din of tuma. So the question is, these priests, they say, one of them, are they mekabel tuma, are they not mekabel tuma? Beishami metam, Beishami says, yes, they are mekabel tuma. Beisilse metam, they're not mekabel tuma. Right, when my priests say, what is the definition of priests say, Rav Huna, Rishoy say, these are the real evil Zeisim. Not that they're so evil, but Rashi just says that they are not ein bishulam nigma lo'olam. They will never fully ripen. These will always be inferior, deficient Zeisim. Rav Yosef Maikra, bring me a rai from the pasuk that the word pritzim means rishoyim. Says Yimor, ubnei pritzi amcha yinasu lahamir chazayim v'nechshalu. So bnei pritzi amcha means the sons of the pritzim, meaning of the rishoyim, of the bad guys. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Miyach, I have another pasuk. V'hoilid bein paritz, he's going to give birth to a bein paritz, a ben rasha, who's a shevach dam. Chas Hashem was going to be a murderer. Okay, so then we see now the definition of pritz zaysim, inferior bad zaysim. V'hoilid bein paritz, kama pritz zaysim. What's the cheshbin that we're talking about? The bishamis metame beisil the metare. What's the shiur? Reb Loza Omar Arbas Kavan Lekoira, that you take the normal amount of zeisim that you put into a beis habad, into an olive press, and normally comes out of that a nice large amount of olive oil. And in this case, the total amount that comes out is 4 kavin for a koira. Koira means for that big beam that you put on top of the zeisim to scratch out, to squeeze out the oil. So if it only produces altogether a bas kavin or less, this is a zoi shvach, that it's not worth all the effort, and these are called the pritzei zeisim, and Beisil therefore says, ah, it's gunish mekunish, and it's tahar. Beishami says, no, doch, it still produces arba kavin. You say, oh, it's not true, you put in an endless number, but it produced 4 kavin, that's still enough to be mekabel tuma. Rabbi Yanai Amri, sosayim lekoira. They say that the shear is sosayim. Now, what's the difference in proportion between Rabbi Loza's shear and Rabbi Yanai's shear? So you all know that a saw has in it 6 kavin. So if you have 2 saw, that means you have 12 kavin. So Rabbi Loza said 4, Rabbi Yanai said 12. So it's a proportion of 3 to 1. So it sounds like it's a big machloikis. So it's more like there's no machloikis over here. Ha bi'asa d'mayli kura ba'ula, ha bi'asa d'mayli tulasa kura ba'ula. The ula means the base habad. That's the olive press. Kur is referring to the number or to the volume of olives that you put into the olive press. So those places that have a relatively small olive press, where they put in a large kur, from this large kur, as you know, a kur is 30 saw. And therefore, from that 30 saw, if the total production that comes out in terms of olive oil is arbas kavin, that is so minimal, so insignificant, that's why Beisil says it's a rei tahar. These are really inferior zeisim. Hobi Asra, that the Rabbi Yonai said, no, the shear is Sasaim, the 12 Kavan, because they didn't put in just one coin. Hobi Asra, the Ma'ili, plus the coin. They put in three coin, which is equivalent of 90 Sa'a. Wow. To put into this Ullah, into the press. But Lamaisa, proportionally, it comes out the same. Because four Kavan to one car is the same thing as 12 Kavan to three car, because it's a 3-to-1 proportion to therefore this one. Machlaikis. Again, we had a Dvei Rabbi Yonai. Tana Rabban. Noch a Mishnah. Usually Tana Rabban is referring to a Braisa here. Tana Rabban is referring to a Mishnah in Masechet Zavin. Usually it's a Tanan, right. Normally it would say Tanan. Tana Rabban is a rare term that is referring to a Mishnah. Usually refers to a Braisa. Is in Kerach? Very good. It's Tana Rabban. What should they do on the Mishnah? Alu be'ilon. What happens if two people went together climbing up the tree together? One of them was a Zav, which means he was Tameh. One of them was a Tar, a regular guy. If they go on a tree, which is a very strong, wonderful tree, as long as they don't touch each other, no problem. The tree was not going to become Tameh because the tree is Mechubel Karka. The two didn't touch each other. It's a very touchy situation, but bottom line is, if they didn't touch, they're both, not they're both Tar, but the Tar remains Tar. What happens if they went on Ilan Shekoichera? Unfortunately, this is a very weak tree, and it's already bending as a result of the combined weight of these two going up the tree. Or they didn't go up the tree, but they went on a soichai. Soichai means on a branch of the tree, shekoichera. And this branch was a very weak branch. In that case, tamei, then the tahar person becomes tamei. Why does the Torah person become Tamei? So Rashi says by the fact that the two of them caused this tree or this branch to bend over, we look upon the person who's the upper person on the tree or on the branch as if he's leaning on the person who's lower than him. Therefore, if the person on top is a Zav, it's as if he's leaning on the Tar down below. Or if the first person on the tree or on the branch is a Tar, it's as if he is leaning on the Zav down below. But either way, one is leaning on the other. If you look at the Rashi on the second line from the top, so Rashi Tomei. Hator becomes Tomei. About the Zav is Tomei because he was Tomei ready from before. Shekivin Shoy Ilanoi Soichai. Koichara, since they are so weak, Nichfef is Tachtein, under the combined weight, they are bending towards the ground. The Kovida Elion al Tachtein, and therefore the upper one is as if he's being Machbet, as if he's weighing down the lower one. Benishan Olav, it's as if he is leaning on him. Bikoichashul Elion. Ubein Zav, Shinishan al Tor, Ubein Tor, Shinishan al Zav, makes a difference Tomei because of the fact that it's Nichfef, that it's bending over. That's the locha, the tohar becomes tani. Now the question is, Freiti Gemara, Heichi Domi Ilan Shekoichara, can you explain to me, give me some description of a Ilan that is so weak? Again, we're bringing Dvei Rabbi Yonai, that's why we're bringing this memory here. The word Ikroi means the trunk on the bottom of the tree. Were you to go and cut that trunk, in other words, cut the tree down and now you only have the trunk, if you don't have enough lochai to go and carve out from that a roiva hakav of wood, of lumber, then it means it's very, very narrow, very small. It's not a strong tree. How can you describe a branch that is weak? Here it says bechez yoina, but in the Bach it says beachez yoina. Achez yoina means achizim, meaning you go and grab the branch with your hand, and you grab it so much. Let's assume that this was like a branch. You grab it with your hand, you don't even see it, right? It's all covered up in your hand, in your palm. Same thing over here is you're talking about a branch of a tree, which is so slim and so thin, when you grab it with your hand, you cannot see the branch. Of course, you can see it as it protrudes from the two sides of the hand. But when it's in the palm, that part which is the palm is able to go and close on the entire branch. So you don't even see it because of the fact that that's how thin it is. So that's a description of the Soichai Koichara. And again, the reason why we brought this is because of the Rabbi Yonai, and Shenechbis means that it's hidden, b'achiz yoina, when you're holding on to it, through your achizah. And now we're going to have another Dvei Rabbi Yonai. So Tumor Tanan Hosam Mahalich Bebeis HaPras Bebeis HaPeres Al Gav Yavonim Sheyochel Hasit Al Odom Al Behemesh Koichan Ra is Tame. What is this all about? You go into Beis HaPras. Beis HaPras, as we know, is a plot of land which at one time was a cemetery at least for one mess. And unfortunately this piece of property over time was plowed over, and the mess unfortunately got into that plow, and the whole thing was a big mess. We are concerned that somewhere throughout this whole plot of land, there is an etzem kisa'oira. Etzem kisa'oira means a bone which is so small, like a sa'oira, like a barley, from a barley stalk of barley. Very, very small. Okay. There is no problem of tumas oil for a person to just walk over it, because tumas oil is only by atzamas what's a shear. Roiv minyan or roiv binyan. Shekoyach, they're fine. Here, however, we're not talking about roiv minyan, we're just talking about one little bindle. But that can be metame b'maga u b'masa. So I'm afraid if somebody's walking over this piece of property, unwillingly or unwittingly, he might go and give it a kick, and therefore he's going to move this etzem kisa'ira, and that's why the person will become tummy. Anyway, samahalaba base of process. The person is walking in such a place, al gabi avanim, and he's walking on top of stones. In other words, it's almost like paved with these little pebbles, these little stones, on top of the property. Shiyoch lahasit, and when he's walking on it, because these are small pebbles and small stones, he can easily go and move the stones just by walking on them. And I'm concerned that among the stones, among these rocks, there might be this etzem kisa'ira, and therefore that will cause him to become tummy. And even if this person is not walking, but rather he is riding ala adam, he's a piggyback ride on a person, or on a behema, if both of them, or either of them, a koichan ra, that they are weak compared to the weight of the person who's sitting on top, he's tummy. Meaning that if these happen to be a zacha giboirim, a Goliath, who's walking around, or this behema is a real starke behema, and when the person is riding on the back, it doesn't affect their walking whatsoever, the person on top remains tohar. However, if they have to be weaklings, then he above will become tummy. Can you give me a description? That as long as the person who's riding on his back causes the person down below to be no kesh, that his knees keep on hitting one another, that knees hitting one another is a sign of weakness. Can you give me a description of a koichara? Matila glov. As long as the person is riding on the back of this horse, the back of this cow, whatever it happens to be, the back of this chamar, it is at the same time, it is releasing excrement, glolim. That's a sign of weakness in this behind. Okay, so that's the halacha legabi tumah in a base of pras. Ami the Rabbi Anai, the tefillu tefillin, dalet kavin. Say Dvei Rabbi Anai, the Gabi Hilchas Tfila and Tfilin is a din of Dalet Kavan. Now, what is this Dalet Kavan that we're talking about? Zokti Mar Litfila Mahi the Sanya. Hanu Yisimasi Al Ksefoi the Yigiyaz Man Tfila. Pochis Me Dalet Kavan Mavshin La Choyrav Umispalel. Arbo Kavan Minich Al Gabi Karka Umispalel. As we know, when a person davens Shemun Esra and he davens anything, davens Kriyashma, he's supposed to have Kavan. Okay, so one of the things that can cause a person not to have Kavan if he's holding stuff. That's why it says it's even questionable if you're supposed to hold a siddur, preferably you put it on the table. Of course, a siddur you're allowed to, because that helps to give you kavanah. But if you're holding anything else in your hand, you're supposed to put it down, you're not supposed to hold it whilst you're davening. Because that shteh's the kavanah, because you're worrying about the thing that you're holding in your hand. So now this person is carrying a masri al ksefai on his shoulders, and now it's mantvil, it's time to daven. If it's supposed to be daven kavan, if it happens to be a very light type of weight, it's only Dalet Kavan. It's a little curious, the Gemara talks about Kavan, because Kavan is really a volume and not so much a weight, but presumably we know that we're talking about normal things, because if you're talking about Dalet Kavan of steel or of iron, obviously that would be heavier than if it's Dalet Kavan of feathers. Okay, but the Gemara uses the volume expression, but if he's carrying something which is less than Dalet Kavan, it's not a heavy weight, it's not a big volume, Mavshin L'Choyrev, what he can do is he can put it on his back, like in a knapsack, like a backpack, it won't affect his Kavan. Volume. I'm sorry?
Volume, it makes more sense, the volume, because
why?
The weight, I mean, you can have something that's very heavy and small and just holding your hand, and even though it's heavy, you don't notice it, but if it's like a whole bunch of pillows or something that are very light, it's distracting.
I hear you loud and clear. That's very good. Very nice chat.
Yeah.
Even a baby, you're not supposed to hold it exactly. Unless the baby's crying and it's not disturbing the whole oilam, then nobody can dab it. But under normal circumstances, you put everything down. I bought kavan, however, if it's a large volume of four kavan, and therefore it does distract him and he's not able to go and dab it properly, you should put it down, and you should go and dab it. Again, this is Dvei Rabbi Anai that we're bringing to the fore, yet another Dvei Rabbi Anai. Now that was the Gabbay Tefillah. What about the Gabbay Tefillah? Zok Yimara, Tfilin Mahi. Decided we learned in the Brisa. How you noise masi al roishay utfilin barosha. What happens if the person was carrying both a burden on his head and tfilin on his head? We don't normally see that here so much, but in the Arab countries, you see the Arabs going and carrying these large baskets and stuff on their heads. So this person is carrying stuff on his head, is also carrying tfilin on his head. Okay, so now we have to be concerned that there may be a merging of these two. And how you tfilin roits its choice, if as a result of the weight of the masui, it causes the tfilin to be roitzit. What size roitzit? Rashi says mismachois. Mismachois means that they start getting sequetched, they get squeezed or crushed under the masui, then it's also then you're not allowed to do that. However, even if the masui does go over the tefillin, as long as it doesn't kvetch the tefillin, well, then it's okay. What is the shear of this type of masui that would cause the pressure on the tefillin? The masui shall bo'es kaven. If it's 4 kaven or more, then we have to be concerned on the pressure on the tefillin. It sounds more like a weight than a volume situation, but regardless, anyway, that would be prohibited. If it's less than 4 kaven, then you're okay. What happens if a person is carrying zevel on his head? Zevel means a fertilizer, excrement. It's filling barosha, it's filling on his head. So now there's not a problem of kvetching the tefillin. It's just push it. It's a disgrace. It's repulsive. It's a bizoyan that both of them should be on his head at the same time. So in terms of the tefillin, we don't want the tefillin to be there at the same time as the zevel. So you take the tefillin off, but he can't carry them in his hands because apparently he has to hold the zevel in on top of his head. So what should he do? Don't just put the tefillin on the side of the head, like on the forehead or on the side, on the temples. For the yikshim, the masav, also don't go and make them like a belt around the loins. They should not be designed. That's also designed. What he can do is he can go and take the tefillin shoroish and add them to tefillin shoyad and put it on his arm so that both of them should be together, the tefillin shoroish and the tefillin shoyad, all on one arm. Again, this is just for transporting purposes. He's not davening. Also remember that in the good old days, many people wore tefillin the entire day, not just during Shacharis. So this person wants to continue wearing his tefillin, but he also has to never schlep this zevel. So he temporarily puts it on his arm together with the tefillin shoyad, and afterwards he'll put it back on the roish when he removes the zevel. Again, this is what Rabbi Yannai said before about the shiurim of Dalit Kavin, both for tefillah and for the tefillin. Zog the Gemara tefillin mishum de aldoi b'mokam tefillin mishum de shiloi amru afilim mitpachas shalhen osel niyach al roish shiyesh by tefillin. Even putting a mitpachas shalhen explains Rashi means even the tefillin boxes or the tefillin zekel where you put your tefillin away, don't put that on the head. Then why would you ever put the tefillin away? After all, you're wearing the tefillin at all times. Since Rashi, you put it away at night. If you look at the Rashi parallel to our Gemara, where you go and put away the tefillin at night, either in the boxes or in the bag and the sack, wherever you put your tefillin away, even that, also niyachal roish yesh by tefillin. In other words, the tefillin should be exclusive. Don't put anything on the head, even if you're going to just put the tefillin sack on the head. So don't do that as well. The kama, and what's the shir? Amar Rabbi, afil the river, the pumpadisa. What are we referring to? According to the Veir Shila, that you're not supposed to put anything, obviously on the rest of the head, which doesn't affect the tefillin, that's not the problem. We're just talking about if the mitpachas is large enough that it's going to be overflowing over the tefillin, overlaying over the tefillin, that would be prohibited. However, if it's small enough, then you can put it on the head. What's the shear of small? That's a very, very small shear. Rashi says, a via litra, dover muatu, a very, very, a 4x4, very, very small, that you can put on the head. That won't interfere with the tefillin. So he brought all these memories because the Rabbi Yannai had something to say on each one of these Mishnayos, each one of these halachas. Okay, we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said at the end, and remember Dr. Goldfarb gave a ringing endorsement before to Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda said that don't talk about a kri, but rather talk about kidei nefila. Remember we talk about in the Mishnah that this field is not producing the way people had projected. It's going to have a very bad year. Said Rabbi Yehuda, as long as it's kidei nefila. What does that mean? Rabbi Ami Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, arbo'a so'in l'kor. Rabbi Ami Delei Omar, shmoinas so'in l'kor. What Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Ami are saying is, what happens if you're talking about a base core? Base core means a field that produces a kor, which means 30 saw, to go and plant such a field, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you need 4 saw of grain, of seeds, to go and produce a tremendous kor. So 4 out of 30, 2 out of 15, 1 out of 7.5. What's the percentage? Roughly 14% or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit less. 13%, 14%, something in that range. 13 to 14% of the amount of seed you need to produce the 100% of the kor. Rabbi Delay Omar, no, it's double the shear, not 4 out of 30, but Shmoyne is on the kor, 8 out of 30. Now it sounds like a big machlekes. Amalei ha'husav l'Rav Chama b'rei de Rabba bar Avua. What does it mean when it says ha'husav?
The Tosos and Chulin d'Avav. It's usually except for the story in Shabbos. Stop. Lami Gimel to Eliyahu Hanavi.
Okay. Yesh Amram. He says Yesh Amram. Then it's Eliyahu Hanavi. He explained to me, Rav Chama b'rei de Rabba bar Avua. As b'loch, I will explain to you. When there's really no machlokes, but rather Mishnei Rabbi Yochanan was in the earlier years, Havishmeina Ara. Then the land was still very fertile. All you had to do was plant 4 saw of seeds, and it produced a ganze base kor. However, the Mishnei de Rabbi Ami, unfortunately, the Jews had sinned. And now we're talking already after the Chorm Beis Midrash. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan was the Shiar and Knesset and Toilet, still from that earlier generations. Rabbi Ami lived already later generations. Okay, is that a later generation? Or is he
a little,
okay, a little bit. So the 20, 30, 40 years in between,
yeah,
that already caused a decline in the agricultural fertility. And therefore, you needed double the amount of seeds to go and produce the same amount of produce. Okay. Then also, we learned in the Mishnah, how Rosh Pisra Esa Omrim. You have a situation where you have a field, and as the workers were harvesting the field, they from time to time they forgot or left over in their reaping, in their harvesting, small amounts of tvua here and there. It was the shear of leket, and therefore there's leket all over the field. And guess what happened? Subsequent to the reaping and harvesting and the leket lying there on the ground, haruach, a wind came, and was Pizra Esa Omrin. There were bundles that were already bundled, or about to become bundled, all different types of grain which were being bundled, and guess what happened? A draft came, a very strong wind, and spread out a lot of the good, I mean, when I say good, in other words, not the leket, but what was supposed to be given, what was supposed to be collected by the workers on behalf of the landowners, on behalf of the farmers. So the ruach was Mafaza the Omrin. So now the question is, what do we do? Obviously, they want to go and collect this together. They don't want to leave everything in the field. There won't be anything left for feeding the mouths of the workers and the owners. So what do you do? You have to try to do an oymid. You try to do some sort of formula, figure out what is the average amount of leket that you could expect on this field. Basically, and you have to go and give it for the aniyim. Now, how do you figure that out? Presumably, you have some sort of statistics that per field, 1%, 2%, 5%, whatever, is left behind as leket. Whatever this field has produced, leave behind 1%, 2%, 5% for the aniyim, whatever it is. And that's why we bring this Gemara, because we had in our Mishnah also the same term, Kedei Nefila. However, this Kedei Nefila is really unrelated with the other Kedei Nefila. The other one was talking about how much seed this field will produce, even though it's a very bad year, it's producing really goodish, but as long as there's enough seed to seed for next year, that's enough for the worker to continue working. What's the Kedei Nefila in this case? The amount that would normally fall off for Kavin for a large car, that's the amount that you have to go and give Aniyim. So therefore, if this happens to be a big base car, the amount that you have to go into the Aniyim, you'd have to give him 4 Kavin. Now the question, however, is when we use the term car, this could be misleading. Why could it be misleading? Normally you think of a base car that it produced a car. However, just like we said in the Gemara before, that to go and seed a base car, you need 4 sa'in. So how much would you need if you had a car of seed? Obviously, that could go and be used to seed a much, much larger quantity. Presumably, we're talking about, for instance, if you said 4 sa'in the car, that's 4 out of 30. So presumably, if you had, for instance, a field of 7.5 car, then 1 car of seed would be enough, because that would be 1 out of 7.5, right? So we said 4 out of 30 is the equivalent of 2 over 15, which is the equivalent of 1 over 7.5. So therefore, if you had a property which was 7.5 car, you'd need 1 car of seed to go and put seed so that it should produce for next year, 7.5 for the harvest season, should produce the 7.5 kor of produce. So therefore, the kasha Gemara now is, boy Rabbi Yirmiya, as we know, Rabbi Yirmiya often asked these types of questions, and he did it, as the Gemara says in other places, to be mesameach, the Talmid HaChachamim, which unfortunately were sometimes depressed because of what was going on in the world. So Rabbi Yirmiya wanted to go and make them smile. So he asked the Korzera Lekar Tvua. Are we talking about a base kor? And therefore it's a kor of Tvua, that Tvua will be produced by this base kor? Or we're talking about a base kor zera, and we're talking about a much, much larger field. In other words, this Arbaz Kavan that you have to leave for the Aniyim, are we talking about a base kor? Or is it Arbaz Kavan for a field of 7.5 kor? Which of course is much, much larger. And the point of siat and the point of shvar. When we're talking about, let's assume we're talking about kar of zera and not kar of tvua, how did they go and seed the property? They had either human workers that would go and spread seeds all over, or they had shvarim that people would sit on the backs or would leading the oxen, and then from the oxen there were presumably the baskets of some sort, where seeds would drop off and fall onto the ground so that you didn't have to have a human doing the spreading of the seeds, but it would be done mechanically, if you will. Today they do it by machine, and then in good old days they did it through shvarim, through oxen. What's the difference between mapoilis yad and mapoilis shvarim? So Rashi explains, when you're doing with a mapoilis yad, you can do it far more exact, because the person who's going, he's going to go and drop seeds all along. What you're talking about with a shvarim, shvarim of course don't have any cycle, so rather they work with, Rashi says, bagola minu keves, the wagon in back of them has holes in it, and the whole wagon is full of seeds, so seeds fall through the holes, and a much larger quantity falls on the ground when the shvarim are doing it, rather than when the human is doing it. So therefore, how much seeds are we talking about? If you're talking about Arbaz Kavan Lekor, is what you want. Toshemat, he also Rovin, Omer Bavo, Omer Bavua, Omer Blazer, Yamila, Omer Biyechanan, Arbaz Kavan Lekor, Zera. We're talking about four Kavan for a field where the seeding of the field is the equivalent of a car, which means it's a much, much larger field, like 7.5 car. Fine. Of Vadai and Tiboylach, we still have the same Shala. When we're talking about that you needed a kor of zera, a kor of seeds, did you need it, the Mapoilis Yad, for humans doing the planting, or the Mapoilis Shvarim, or a Shvarim, where it would be a much smaller property because they use up much more seeds? So Marteku, Tishvi Ataris, Kishra, Boyis, Termain. We wait until Eliyahu Novi comes. Have a wonderful day, Rabbi Sa.